And rioting has erupted again in Miami, causing the Miami Heat to take a day off. Good evening, I'm Mark Tremaine.
And I'm Peter Dudley. We'll have these stories and more coming up.
A man with an automatic rifle invaded an elementary school in Stockton and opened fire today, killing 5 children, wounding 30 other people, and then fatally shooting himself in the head. Stockton Deputy Police Chief Ralph Tribble said the gunman, dressed in military battle gear with a flak jacket, set his car on fire as a diversion before entering the school. He carried a .45 caliber pistol and an AK-47 automatic rifle, a military assault weapon capable of firing 600 rounds a minute. The attack at Cleveland Elementary School came shortly before noon.
The governor's new budget is getting flack from UC students. The 88-89 budget is calling for a 10% increase in student registration fees and even more for students who live out of state. Dale Bankhead, executive director of the University of California Students Association, says that the increase goes against the spirit of a law which governs student increases. The law provides a formula for gradual annual fee increases to avoid a situation in which a large increase might be needed. Bankhead says that the governor is not holding up his end of the bargain.
We really think that the formula should be followed this year, that if it was good in good budget years, then it also should apply in bad budget years, because that was the idea, that it provided stability over time.
However, UC spokesman Rick Malastina says that the law in question contains a provision for years when the state cannot provide what UC needs. He says this is one of those years.
So in that respect, it is consistent with the spirit of that law. It's an unusual situation, one that we would rather not have happen, but because the state is unable to fund us at the level we need, that provision of the law has to come into effect.
Whatever the interpretation of the law, the regents must meet to discuss the situation Friday morning. Bankhead says the UCSA is not happy with the outlook.
We're going to ask them not to support the fee increase that the governor's asked for, but of course we recognize that the budget situation is pretty grave and that the fee increase is not illegal. So we're not really optimistic that the regents won't approve it.
However, the governor's budget still has to face Congress. Malastino said Congress could reduce the increase, but he said that might not be likely.
Governor Dick Majan says he doesn't think Californians need a general tax increase, despite the painful cuts he had to make in his budget proposal. Dick Majan told the Sacramento Press Club today that annual tax revenues have jumped 73% since he became governor 6 years ago. The real problem, the governor said, is that, in his words, the demand for government services seemed to have an insatiable appetite that no amount of tax revenue will satisfy. However, Duke Majan left the door open to a gasoline tax increase if approved by the voters.
200 homeless activists gathered in Atlanta over the weekend. Longtime homeless advocate Mitch Snyder says the solution to the problem is apparent.
Well, there's nothing more creative than spending money. I mean, you want a military defense, you pay for it. You want more of a military defense, you increase the budget by 100%, which is what they've done. You want housing, you don't cut the housing budget by 77%, which is also what they've done. So without money, there will be no housing, and we can get real creative all day and all night.
The activists met to discuss how to get the money out of the federal government. They believe their efforts will be more successful if they work together. Snyder says future action was agreed upon.
You need to work towards mounting a major offensive in November or December, the date to be chosen in the next couple of weeks, and that we will attempt to bring literally hundreds of thousands of people to Washington to press the demand for affordable housing and to force the federal government back into the housing business.
The meeting was sponsored in part by the Community for Creative Nonviolence. Snyder says public attention is increasing, but the politicians are always the last to move.
The Long Beach City Council has asked a prosecutor to investigate an alleged police brutality incident that was broadcast on national television. A black off-duty police officer took an undercover TV crew to Long Beach over the weekend, hoping to demonstrate mistreatment by officers there. In the videotape, the black officer is seen being pushed through a window by a white Long Beach police officer who stopped his car for an alleged traffic violation.
Alameda County's Office of Emergency Services is making a change probably not too many people will notice. They're retiring old air raid sirens in favor of an emergency warning system that's been in place for years, the long, high-pitched tone your radio and television stations play every now and then, otherwise known as the emergency broadcasting system. Jim Moore of the department says the sirens just don't do any good anymore.
There are a lot of emergencies that we have to plan for, and most of this is being taken care of by the emergency broadcast system. Most people don't realize what the sirens are for when they do hear them anyway.
And although you have to be listening to a radio for the emergency broadcasting system to work, Moore said it's a lot better than the sirens.
And we have better means of evacuating people now that are much more practical and much more realistic.
Moore added that most cities in the county already had their sirens turned off before the decision to turn them all off.
An FBI official said today he hopes photographs taken by low-flying military airplanes will help turn up clues in the cases of two missing girls, including 9-year-old Michaela Garrett of Hayward. Richard Held, a special agent in charge of the San Francisco FBI office, said the sophisticated aerial search will be conducted tomorrow if weather permits. Held says investigators will compare the photos with those shot by a commercial aerial photographer, photography firm, that is, prior to Michaela's abduction November 19th. He said they will look for surface changes like digging.
A federal appeals court in San Francisco today heard the Reagan administration defend its attempt to label some political documentary films as propaganda when approving their tax-free export. Justice Department lawyer Wendy Keats told the court that a propaganda label does not disparage a film, but merely provides information that lets a foreign government decide whether to approve the film as educational. However, a lawyer for the Center for Constitutional Rights called the propaganda label an informal system of censorship. He said it is part of a U.S. information agency screening system designed to stop foreign circulation of documentary films on political grounds.
UC Berkeley has a new plan for dealing with students. The old approach was a sort of survival of the fittest. Students who could get their way through the bureaucracy were said to be better off for the experience. Associate Financial Aid Director Cheryl Haig says that some believed this was to help students gain what was called real-world experience. But now Haig and other UC administrators have formed the Frontline Task Force. After 1 year of study, the committee issued its recommendations, and those ideas are now being put into place. With us now is Catherine Mitchell, who chairs the task force's training committee. Maybe you can tell us first why the change of heart, why they changed their ideas about how to deal with, I guess, all the students.
I don't think it was really a change of heart, but a realization that students frequently see their professors 2 to 3 times a week in front of 200 people, but you might see a staff person every day one-on-one.
Well, I'm just speaking from personal experience. I like what's happened because my first 2 years at school were just very hard. I remember going to lines and having arguments with people.
And being told they don't do that here.
Right. What happens now? You're training the people who work the front counters at these,
right,
all over campus or just in Sproul Hall?
We've started with people in undergraduate affairs because that's where our funding came from.
So what kind of training do they get?
We focus on working in a multicultural environment, acknowledging that Berkeley is a multicultural environment, and work on building communication and complaint handling skills. And also a big emphasis is on referrals. So you're not told, we don't do that here. Instead, you're told, we don't do that here, but let me find out who can help you.
Have employees been receptive to that kind of training?
I think they've been really receptive, especially because it allows them to be proactive in their work rather than feeling overwhelmed and in a defensive position.
So they haven't, I've run into so many who have just, they act like they didn't want to be there. And I kind of wondered why they were at the counter. The counter is the most important position, I would think.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because that's exactly what we're promoting. It is the most important position. Frequently, it's the only person that students have contact with. And I think what we're trying to do is make sure we have people on the front line who enjoy working with students.
Okay, tell us what's been implemented so far and what is in the works.
Great. Implemented an orientation video that's an overview of frontline service that's available through educational TV. We have the training available for both frontline staff and supervisors. And there's also an award system promoting staff that provide good frontline service that are awarded each year.
Okay, thanks a lot, Catherine.
Thank you.
Very helpful. Thank you.
A staff report of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission recommends a $100,000 fine against the Sacramento Municipal Utility District for violations of NRC regulations. The violations include release of radioactive effluents at the Rancho Seco nuclear power plant. Sacramento Utility General Manager David Boggs said the publicly owned utility will not oppose the proposed fine, noting that all of the alleged violations took place from 1983 through 1986 before extensive plant modifications and under an earlier management. Boggs said the fine is an issue from the past. The NRC cited six alleged violations of its regulations, including release during 1985 of radioactive materials in which a member of the public could have received a total body radiation dose exceeding the regulatory limit.
Okay, coming up, we're going to have more on the Miami riot and national and international news. Stay tuned for that. People in the predominantly black Overtown section of Miami are still angry after last night's fatal shooting of an unarmed black motorcyclist by a white policeman. The FBI has promised an investigation to determine whether there were civil rights violations in the incident, which sparked 6 hours of rioting. Efforts to restore calm were marred when a white man in a luxury car reportedly fired into a crowd of blacks in the area this afternoon. Later, at least one car was burned and crowds threw rocks and bottles at the police. The president of the Miami chapter of the NAACP says the incident was merely the spark that unleashed years of frustration among the area's blacks. He says some blacks feel cheated by all the attention paid to the influx of Cuban and Nicaraguan refugees.
The street violence hitting the city of Miami has reached into the sports world. Tonight's NBA game at the Miami Arena between the Heat and Phoenix Suns has been postponed because of that civil unrest. Heat managing general partner Louis Scheffel made the announcement several minutes before tip-off after getting approval from the league commissioner David Stern, city officials, and local police. They had all asked for this postponement. No makeup date was immediately announced. Driving to the arena, located at the edge of Miami's Overtown area, gave game officials Joe Crawford, Jack Nyes, and Gary Benson a first-hand look at the violence. Crawford said a rock shattered their car window.
Miami police now say a police bullet killed a motorcyclist last night. Shooting of a black man by the white officer touched off the riots. The officer has been taken off duty as investigations continue.
Meanwhile, President Lloyd George Bush's choice for Secretary of State is looking for his confirmation on Capitol Hill. In the hearings today, James Baker said that as Secretary of State, he would continue much of the legacy left by the Reagan administration. However, one point he stressed was the United States needs to review its position on strategic arms talks with the Soviets.
Only Sunday, but 1 hour after the adoption of the Vienna concluding document, and in direct violation of the commitments just solemnly given by the government of Czechoslovakia, riot police...
We'll get back to that in a moment. Let's go now to British Foreign Minister Sir Geoffrey Howe has been more skeptical than Secretary of State George Shultz regarding the Soviet Union. The BBC's Mark Brain has more on that.
On this first day of speeches at the Vienna gathering, speaker after speaker has highlighted the extraordinary progress that's been made on human rights observance in Eastern Europe in the 27 months since the negotiations began. Provisions now agreed are being presented by both sides as a watershed in East-West relations. But the atmosphere is not one of unadulterated celebration. Both Mr. Shultz and Sir Geoffrey Howe today emphasized the distance still to be traveled before there can be, in Mr. Gorbachev's phrase, a common European home. As the two main Western speakers of the day, both men, Mr. Shultz by name, the Foreign Secretary indirectly, condemned Czechoslovakia and East Germany for their suppression over the weekend of peaceful demonstrations in Prague and Leipzig. Romania, too, was singled out for attack for its declaration that it does not intend to honor the obligations of the Vienna Agreement. East and West, said Sir Geoffrey, shared a responsibility to secure and uphold human rights and democratic freedom.
That requires not just commitment, but action. A change not just of style, but of heart. After all, It's hardly progress for a cannibal to use a knife and fork.
Sir Geoffrey's comments underline Britain's insistence on the institutionalization of change in the Soviet Union. Britain, said the Foreign Secretary, would attend a human rights conference now scheduled in Moscow for 1991 only if it can be convinced that the Soviet commitment to change is irreversible, extending beyond the determination of a single Soviet leader.
That was the BBC's Mark Brain in Vienna.
Also in Vienna, George Shultz was a little less skeptical. He wrapped up his final mission abroad today there at an international conference on human rights. He directly attacked four East European countries, though. In his harshest statement of the day, he put down East Germany and Czechoslovakia for ignoring the Vienna agreements.
Only Sunday, but 1 hour after the adoption of the Vienna concluding document, and in direct violation of the commitments just solemnly given by the government of Czechoslovakia, riot police trained rubber truncheons, tear gas, and water cannon on participants in peaceful demonstrations in Prague. Reportedly, 91 demonstrators were detained. And the same day, the day the Vienna concluding document was adopted, we are told that the authorities of the German Democratic Republic detained 190 human rights activists demonstrating in Leipzig.
However, Shultz was overall pleased with the progress made in human rights over the years. Although he admitted the conference still had a lot to do, he said they had made gains.
If you measure where we are today with where we were in 1975, then I think you see big improvements. In fact, I think if you measure where we are today with where we were when this conference started, you see big improvements. But you also see that that promise is still way ahead of the reality.
In addition to Czechoslovakia and East Germany, Shultz noted Romania and Bulgaria as human rights violators.
Well, let's go from the old Secretary of State to who will be the new Secretary of State. At his confirmation hearings today, James Baker stressed that the United States needs to review its position on strategic arms talks with the Soviets.
We have to, it seems to me, do more than just simply review the position. We must take a hard look at our negotiating position. I must make some recommendations to the president with respect to whether or not we should change any of our negotiating objectives. And the Secretary of Defense is going to have to make some recommendations to the president with respect to strategic modernization that impact this area as well.
Baker also took a solid stand on the Contras in Nicaragua, saying the U.S. must unite in its position on the rebels.
I think it's very, very important that we move in a unified way here. I do not think that as a matter of humanitarian, that on humanitarian grounds or moral grounds, we can abandon the Contras. We simply cannot do that. The United States simply must not do that.
Baker also joined those hopeful that the Soviet Premier Mikhail Gorbachev will succeed in his plans to boost the Soviet economy, saying that he does not advocate an attitude that promotes failure. Baker is expected to be confirmed swiftly.
If Edwin Meese were still the Attorney General, he'd be facing disciplinary action by the Justice Department. That's according to a department report released today accusing the former Attorney General of ethics violations. However, since Meese is no longer a government employee, no charges will be filed against him. Current Attorney General Richard Thornburg, who ordered the investigation, says the book on Meese is now officially closed.
I think important that these investigations go forward. But I think there's a time when they're over, and that time is today.
Ethics questions revolve around Meese's involvement in the WedTech defense contracting case, a Middle East oil pipeline project, and telephone regulation. White House spokesman Marlon Fitzwater says, despite the department's report, President Reagan still believes his old friend Meese did nothing wrong. Meese, who is on vacation in Florida, has not yet commented on the report.
Inaugural preparations are in full swing. Thousands of performers are rehearsing for scores of events, beginning with tomorrow's Twilight Pageant at the Lincoln Memorial. A spokeswoman says President-elect Bush is busily trimming his inaugural address to something in the range of 15 minutes. He'll give the speech, his first as president, at noon on Friday.
The Bush administration could have a ticklish diplomatic question to deal with shortly after taking office. Palestine Liberation Organization Chief Yasser Arafat has accepted an invitation to speak to an Arab American group in Washington in April. When Arafat asked for a visa to speak at the UN last month, the Reagan administration turned him down, saying Arafat had ties to terrorism. Since then, Arafat has renounced terrorism, and the Reagan administration has opened talks with the PLO.
It appears that serial killer Theodore Bundy's appeals have all been exhausted. Bundy is scheduled to die in Florida's electric chair next Tuesday. The Supreme Court today turned down his latest appeal. Florida Governor Bob Martinez says this is what the death penalty is all about.
He represents what's worst about the system and why you have capital punishment.
Bundy is facing the electric chair for the murders of a 12-year-old girl and two sorority sisters in Florida. He is also suspected of having killed dozens of women in sex-related crimes in Colorado, Utah, and Washington State.
The U.S. Supreme Court today upheld the death sentences of four California death row inmates, including Malcolm Robbins, who was convicted of killing a six-year-old Isla Vista boy in 1980 and linked to the sex slayings of three other youths. The justices also upheld the death sentences of Darnell Lucky, convicted of killing two Los Angeles jewelry store owners in 1981, Fernando Belmontes, who killed a woman in the San Joaquin County town of Victor in 1982, and Manuel Babbitt, who killed a 78-year-old Sacramento woman in 1980.
President Reagan reportedly has approved 10 pardons in recent days, but an administration source says newspaper heiress Patricia Hearst Shaw and industrialist Armin Hammer are still waiting. Hearst was convicted for her role in a 1974 bank robbery after she had been kidnapped by the Siamese Liberation Army. Hammer was convicted of three misdemeanors in connection with the Watergate scandal.
Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi wants to get rid of his country's press agency and other government agencies. Barnaby Mason of the BBC has the story.
Colonel Gaddafi singled out two bodies for special criticism. Complaints were mounting, he said, against the security apparatus, and its violations were increasing. He gave no details, but remarked that it competed with the foreign ministry and duplicated operations with the Bureau of Investigation. Colonel Gaddafi reserved his sharpest words for the Libyan news agency, JANA. It was a huge octopus with hundreds of officials and still useless. Hot and fast news never arrived, he said. The item broadcast by the World Today, JANA reported the day after tomorrow. In one of his characteristic flashes of insight and frankness, the Libyan leader said the news agency was frightened of making a mistake and being held responsible by someone. The other organizations due for abolition, he said, were those in charge of sport, marketing farm produce, and importing cars. As usual, Colonel Gaddafi's speech lacked detail on how these radical changes were to be carried out, and there must be great skepticism as to whether they'll happen. But there has been a real shift to private enterprise in certain fields. The atmosphere in Tripoli, at least before the row over the alleged chemical weapons plant, was reported to be more relaxed, and normal links have been restored with Libya's western neighbors.
That was Barnaby Mason of the BBC.
Well, let's take a look at the area's weather right now. Let's go to KALX meteorologist Mike Pechner. Mike.
How you doing, St. Peter and St. Mark? A little bit of fog this morning around the area. It hung around most of the day up in the Oak and Berkeley Hills. And hazy sunshine just before the sun went down tonight. Fog and low clouds dense again tonight and tomorrow morning. Lows will be in the 40s. Highs tomorrow 50s and lower 60s. Probably fairing out at the end of the week with light winds. Increasing clouds Saturday. Rain likely Sunday. Then going back to fair weather the first part of next week. And in some areas, believe it or not, we are behind last year's rainfall totals in some parts of the Bay Area. We haven't had much rain in January, which is a big rain producer. So keep saving water. We'll need it down the road. That's evening weather. I'm meteorologist Mike Pechner for KALX.
Okay, thanks a lot, Mike. Defrocked evangelist Jim Baker appeared in a Charlotte, North Carolina courtroom today to plead innocent to charges he diverted millions of dollars from his PTL television ministry. Baker's attorney has requested a gag order in the case. And coming up, we'll have all the sports news. Stay tuned for that.
Big games all around. Good evening, everybody. Phil Rainey with Tuesday's edition of KALX Sports. On the local front, both the men's and women's hoop teams are inactive until they take the floor again to face, you know, them guys. The Stanford men come into Harmon on Thursday, while the Cal and Stanford women's teams square off at Harmon on Friday. And speaking of big games, 49er wide receiver Jerry Rice is listed as questionable and whether or not he'll start for San Francisco in this Sunday's Super Bowl. Rice re-injured an ankle he sprained earlier this season in yesterday's practice. But for the money, you can count on Rice to start. Another bit of big news, 49er owner Eddie DeBartolo said that he is almost certain that, win or lose, Sunday's Super Bowl may be Bill Walsh's last game as head coach. Walsh has been San Francisco's head coach for the past 10 years and has led the team to 3 Super Bowls. And now on to big surprises. If you were part of the 12,340 frenzied fans at the Coliseum last night, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the Warriors beating up on Seattle in a big way. The Warriors led by as much as 21 points after 3 quarters. They stumbled a bit in the fourth and then scored 36 of the final 56 points to pound the Seattle Supersonics 146-117. Seattle coach Bernie Bickerstaff said his Sonics were lucky to be alive. And in the NBA tonight, the Supersonics put their 12-game home winning streak on the line against the Los Angeles Clippers, a club the Sonics destroyed by 50 points during LA's last visit to the Coliseum. The Clippers have dropped 9 straight overall. Also, Milwaukee plays in Atlanta, with the Bucks having won 6 in a row. And in NCAA news, the 12-man NCAA Rules Committee plans to vote tomorrow morning on adding tiebreakers to all its college football games. Currently, Division I AA, 2 and 3 use the method to settle playoff contests only. The new proposal would apply to over 100 Division I-A schools and everyone else for the entire season. Under the tie-breaking procedure, each team would get an equal number of chances to score from 25 yards out from the goal line. The Rules Committee is meeting on Marcos Island, Florida. In baseball news, the Minnesota Twins remain hopeful they can nail down outfielder Kirby Puckett to a multi-year contract before their arbitration hearing next month. Puckett earned just over $1 million in 1989, a season in which he batted .356 with 234 hits, 24 homers, and 121 RBIs. For 1989, Puckett is expected to request the arbitrator more than double his salary. And finally, at the Australian Open Tennis Championships, top-seeded Steffi Graf of West Germany meets Canadian Renee Simpson in a second-round match later today. Zina Garrison also plays a second-rounder. An earlier Australian Open victories went to Czechoslovakia's Ivan Lendl, West German Boris Becker, Sweden's Stefan Edberg, and American John McEnroe. In women's play in Melbourne, Martina Navratilova and Argentine Gabrielle Sabatini also moved into round 2. And that's the sporting line for this Tuesday. Phil Rainey, Calex Sports.
Okay, thanks, Phil. In a recap and an update of our top story, police have now identified the gunman in today's Stockton Elementary School massacre as 24-year-old Patrick West, a drifter with a long criminal record. Deputy Police Chief Lucian Neely says West, also known as Patrick Purdy, most recently lived in Lodi, California. He says West had an extensive criminal record, and many of the crimes were committed in the L.A. area. Authorities say a gunman dressed in battle gear, the gunman, that's West, dressed in battle gear and carrying 2 handguns and an AK-47 assault rifle, opened fire in the yard of the Cleveland Elementary School this morning, killing 5 students and injuring at least 30 people.
Well, that wraps it up for tonight's edition of the KALX Evening News. That's KALX, where it's the information that matters. Special thanks go to engineer Phil Ankle. And
that's about it. Tune us in at 5:30 every weekend night and 8 a.m. in the morning. Tune us in tomorrow, and we'll see you later. Have a good evening.
Good night.